It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign Urbana, where we talk all things Illini along with other area and national sports. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Illini Fella Saturday Sports Talk Show. We are on location at Illinois football practice this morning off St. Mary's Road. Lauren Tate alongside as well. The Illini just getting started this morning, and we're kicking off the show with Athletic Director Josh Whitman. Good morning, Josh.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Congratulations to you and Hope on your new addition to your family 8 days ago, right?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm not doing the math. Well, I think it's maybe 9 days. But, yeah, he's been a lot of fun, and we're excited to have him in the house. And it's been really cool to watch our daughter, Tate, start to adjust to him and be around him. And it's been a lot of fun.
Does that put him in the 2036 recruiting class or thereabouts?
I think I heard that from someone. I haven't done the math yet, but he came out big. So if the trend continues, we may have some promise there.
Well, it's kind of fun being sitting here where we are right now in day two of football practice. You got the itch to put the pads on?
Oh, you always get a little time this year. It's when you get out here and smell the grass and see the lines painted and hear the pads popping, it does get the juices flowing a little bit. So it's always the time of year that I look forward to.
Anything particular, Josh, you saw yesterday, new or different? Everybody's talking about the likelihood of Bush being a real contender at that quarterback spot. What do you see?
I thought they looked great yesterday, for considering it was the first day. They looked like they were pretty advanced in terms of the installation of the offense. It looked like they were moving the ball around pretty well. I was pleased with everything I saw. I thought, as far as first days go, I thought it was pretty promising. And looked like we got a number of guys under center who I think can deliver the ball where they need to. And we got some guys on the outside who can make some plays with it. So there's some things there that, as they work through training camp, I'm sure they'll continue to come together. But I thought for a first day, it was pretty exciting.
What do you see at the tight end position, your old position?
Well, we got some really good players there, obviously. And anytime you can get somebody on the Mackey list as a sophomore, that's always something to look forward to with Lewis. And of course, you got Caleb out there, and some of our other guys who've done such a nice job over the years. So I think it's a everybody says in training camp, hey, we're going to involve the tight end more, and we'll see how the season unfolds. But obviously, Lewis had a great year last year, and I think there's every reason to expect that he'll be equally as productive this year.
The two you mentioned, Dorsey and Reams, are almost semi-wide receivers in their ability to get open and to run and get open. And they're not 280 pounds either, which it looks to me like they're more receivers than blockers maybe.
I think that's right. And the position has evolved a lot. It's not the same kind of tight end position that I played all those years ago.
Were you always inside?
Not always, but a lot. I certainly was more comfortable with my hand on the ground and being in that position to block or go out onto a route. But you don't see a lot of that anymore. You still see it on occasion, but you see a lot more of the guys flexed out in the slot now than you ever have.
Back then, though, the tight end was one position, the fullback was another, and now it's almost the same position.
It is, and really that was starting to happen when I was playing. You saw some overlap between the tight end and fullback. In fact, I moved when I got into the National Football League. My first training camp, the Buffalo Bills moved me from a tight end to a fullback, and I played fullback for a bit of a time that year. And there were some interchangeable pieces then, and I think they still are to a point, but you just don't see that position on the field as often as you did at one time.
Year three of the Lovie Smith era here. What kind of discussions have you had with him, as you know, looking at the overall plan and where it is at this point?
We're both excited. We know all the hard work that's gone into the last couple of years, the great foundation that has been laid. I think you're starting to see some of these younger guys get a little bit older. They had another off season. What a lot of people don't realize, too, is when you play as many true freshmen as we did last year, not only are they playing probably before they're ready, but they also miss out on the opportunity of the redshirt year with that time in the weight room and that development process. And so they're also starting to pick up some speed in the weight room. This is their first full off season. And then you've got, of course, another, I think, really strong recruiting class with some really talented players in it. And we'll see this year with the change in the redshirt rules. I think we'll see a lot of different faces on the field early in the season, and a lot of guys will have chances to step out and show that they can perform. And if they can, then they'll be out there most of the year. And if they can't, then we'll be able to protect that redshirt and get them back on the sidelines so that they can come back and do it again next year.
You mentioned the new redshirt rule, in which, if folks haven't seen that yet, states that a player can play in up to 4 games. Your thoughts of that? Do you like it?
I do like it. I do like it. I have had mixed feelings about it from when it was first introduced, but as it's gained some traction now and had a chance to talk with more coaches around the country about it, read more about it, I think there is some real value to it. I think, you know, in my role, my bigger concern is usually when you make those kinds of rules, what are the implications of those rules for other sports? And you start doing the math, and all of a sudden that's, you know, roughly 10 basketball games that somebody could play with, while at the same time protecting a redshirt. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but those are the kinds of, as an athletic director, you have to think about. And but for football, I think it's a great rule, and I'm excited to see it get implemented this year.
Do you see that as something that's in the pipeline for other sports?
I don't, not yet. I know the way coaches think, and I know the way that that people start to see what happens with one sport and how they might be able to apply it to others. And I don't think we'll ever get to a place where a basketball player is playing 10 games and still protecting a redshirt. But
maybe 4 or 5.
But
six.
Maybe a few. You never know. You never know. And we'll see where things develop. The reality is that a lot of these young guys want to play. They want to come in and get an opportunity. And it's a way to keep them engaged, motivated. If we're able to keep some of these guys with a game under their belt and we're fortunate enough to get to a bowl game, you're able to get guys into the bowl game experience, which would be pretty special. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it, and I'm excited to see how it kind of works its way out through the system this season.
Josh, everybody's interested in the hockey possibilities, and I know that's still a little ways off, but I understand there's a meeting coming up August 16 at Urbana Country Club, in which I assume it's a kind of a fundraiser. You can explain it to me if you want. I just think that this is a really complex thing, but what a tremendous thing it would be for downtown.
It would be exciting, and we do have an event. We've called it the CU Power Play. We're hosting at the Urbana Country Club August 16th, as you said, and chance to get a lot of folks here from the local community. We did a similar event up in Chicago for more sort of the Chicago-based hockey clientele several months ago, and now we want to bring...
How'd that work out?
It worked out great. We had a nice turnout. People were excited about the project. But this one's a little more community-focused, a little more local in nature, and we're hoping to get a lot of good folks in the room and present the idea as a full-scale project. It's really the arena's the centerpiece, but it's the entire development that comes around it that I think gets our local folks as excited as anything. And so it is, as you said, Lauren, it's incredibly complex. That's one of the things that gets me excited about it, is the number of people that we can bring around the table and partner with to try and bring something like this across the finish line. It would be, I think, largely new ground for a college athletic program. I don't know that we've seen an example of a project that has really pulled from as many different stakeholders, as many different partners. And if we can get everybody to come to the table and cooperate and think pretty globally about how this project could benefit everybody involved, I think it could be really groundbreaking.
Do you see any problems with taking it away from campus, taking 5 sports basically away from campus?
I don't. No, I think that our student athletes are going to spend plenty of time on campus. They always will be here. And the reality is that downtown location anymore, as the students continue to migrate to the north, we're seeing all these large developments come up around Green Street and even north of Green Street. That site is more proximate to a lot of those student residences than a place down here in our more traditional footprint would be. So I think it's a great opportunity, and we're excited to see where it could go.
Talking with Athletic Director Josh Whitman on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk, live from Illinois football practice. When we talked to you in June in Chicago, the news of legalized gambling was kind of fresh then. Have you gotten your mind around that yet, and what are your thoughts on it now, a couple of months later?
It's still something that we're all wrestling with. I think we're all sort of looking for some assistance, some guidance from the conference offices, from the NCAA, certainly from the governments. It is still a source of concern. It doesn't seem like it's been fast-tracked in Illinois the same way that it has been in some other states. We've seen other states that have really rushed to the finish line and gotten something in place even for this fall. But I do continue to have concerns about how it gets implemented and what the potential challenges are that could arise for college athletics in particular. But we'll continue to monitor it and be an active participant in the conversation. But it's something that's got some real opportunity, depending on some people's perspective. But for us, it has a lot of challenge, and we just need to be very thoughtful and intentional how we work
through it. Do you have someone in your department who's been assigned to follow that or analyze it?
Yeah, Warren Hood and Marty Kaufman are both they do a lot of projects together, and they're kind of our head revenue officers, and so they'll take the lead on that as we get a chance to start having more formative conversations.
How much attention, and it's hard not to pay attention to, the Ohio State situation? Have you kept your eye on that? And what do you, as an AD, learn from things like that and things you see going on elsewhere?
Certainly, I'm paying attention the same way that everybody else is paying attention. I know a lot of the people who are involved in that case, and so it becomes a little more personal. But you also, anytime those kinds of circumstances present themselves as the athletic director, as an athletic program, we need to take those opportunities to do some self-reflection, look internally at our own practices, at our own policies. I feel really good about a lot of the things that we put in place over the last 2.5 years to try and protect ourselves against these kinds of things. But no matter what you do, it's never foolproof. It's never 100% certain that you can stay away from these kinds of developments, and so we always want to take the moment, take a good look, and we have a lot of conversations about these things internally. We talk with our staff, we talk with our coaches, we talk with our student athletes. We want everybody to understand what their responsibilities are, what their opportunities are in terms of if you have a situation that you need to talk with someone about, who are the people that you can talk to. For our staff, when these kinds of things are brought to your attention, what exactly do you do with it? And it's a growing concern and one that we want to be sure we're in front of as we move forward.
Do you go directly to the chancellor if something come like that? I mean, it sounds to me like the main thing is for the coach to tell the AD and the AD to talk to people in charge, and that way at least there's not any cover-up.
Yeah, I think that every situation is a little bit different depending on the facts of what you have. Certainly Title IX in its most recent iteration has been used in a much more broad sense than what a lot of us old athletics folks have remembered it. It's no longer just the gender equity law. It's now a sexual violence, sexual safety law that's being applied broadly to every campus in the country, and that brings with it certain reporting requirements. And so we do extensive education with our staff, helping them understand again what their obligations are. It's not as straightforward as you would suggest, Lauren. It's not just, hey, the head football coach tells the athletic director, the athletic director tells the chancellor. We have designated people on campus who are the recipients of that information as it becomes available, and we need to be sure that we're not just telling our superiors, but we're making sure that the right authorities on campus are informed of those situations as they happen.
Back to the football field, new offensive coordinator Rod Smith. Have you had a chance to have many conversations with him, and do you know much about his offensive style?
I really have enjoyed Rod. I think he's been a breath of fresh air here in our staff and brought a great background, great experience. He's got a wonderful personality. I think the guys have connected well with him. It seems like the system is relatively straightforward. I don't think it's been hard for them to necessarily pick up, which is a great thing. And I think there's an excitement as I talk to the players and the coaches about the system, and I'm excited to watch them continue to learn it and start to execute it better as we get through training camp.
Where do you think the most improvement needs to come with this football team going into year three?
Oh, I don't know that I'm going to point to any one particular area. I think that, you know, obviously when they get out on the field come a month from now, we're going to learn a lot more about their progress. But I know the work that they put in. I know the great work that they've been doing in the weight room, on the practice field, in their drills, and I know how important it is to these guys. And And so I'm excited to just see them take a step forward in terms of their competitiveness. I want them to go on the field with an enthusiasm and to be confident. And this is what I told them last night when I met with them after practice, that every time they step on the field, they need to have great confidence that they're going to be able to win their battle every time the ball is snapped. And given all the work that they put in over the last 2.5 years, there's no reason they shouldn't expect that.
Did you as a player look forward to this time of year, or was it just one of those things that had to be done?
Every football player has a really odd relationship with the game of football. It's kind of a love-hate thing at different points in time. And I don't know that any player would say training camp was their favorite time of year. But you do look forward to it. You put in so much work. Football is a unique sport in when you compare the quantity of work to the number of competitive opportunities.
Right.
It's unique because you only get 12 games, if you're lucky, maybe a 13th or 14th. But you put in this inordinate amount of work preparing for those dozen opportunities. And so you do. You get excited. It's kind of like pulling the rubber band back on a slingshot. You pull it back, you pull it back, you pull it back, and eventually when training camp comes, you get to let it go. And that part is rewarding, just to see all the progress you've made. That when you get out on the field, I remember when going from my freshman to my sophomore year, you literally go on the field to start your sophomore year, and all of a sudden you're able to do things that you couldn't do your freshman year. And you realize that you were putting in the work during the off season, but to see that work all of a sudden translate to performance, to see it translate to your ability to finish a block on a much bigger defensive end, or your ability to get out of a cut that you didn't be able to use to execute, that really is a pretty eye-opening thing. To with that kind of a gap between those opportunities, all of a sudden you're a different player, and that's a pretty rewarding deal.
Josh, a lot of concern among the fans about the ability to watch the games on Comcast as of September 1st. What do you hear from the Big Ten office and from Mark Silverman in that regard?
We've heard a lot of the same things that the public has now heard. Mark, I think, did a nice job up at the Big Ten kickoff luncheon. He went in front of the media and answered a lot of questions, talked about what the negotiation has looked like. My understanding is that we've sent some proposals Comcast way, and we haven't gotten a lot of response.
They always take it to the last day, don't they?
They do, and I think this will be no different. I think that as this winds its way towards the end of August, people will become increasingly aware of what's about to happen. And we hope that our fans who have Comcast will pick up the phone and call Comcast and tell them how important it is to them that they have the Big Ten Network, that they have the opportunity to watch the Fighting Illini. And I'm in that boat, frankly. I'm a Comcast subscriber, and I'm going to have to make a decision here before too long whether I'm going to stay with them or make a switch to somebody that is going to continue to show the games. And so, we'll see. I think if I'm looking at my crystal ball, I would be surprised if we had a deal for the first game.
Really?
But you never know. I think that, obviously Comcast is a major company, and Big Ten Network has a strong opinion about how they want this thing to play out. And so those two heady forces are going to have some tension here toward the end of the month.
Well, Josh, we'll just look at it this way. If you can't get Comcast for the first game, you can come to the game.
That's exactly right. That's the message we would give all of our fans. I think it is important that we get as many folks as possible into the stands. And we've got a great schedule this year, an opportunity for us to go out and hopefully have a nice season. I don't know that our fans always fully appreciate just how important they are in continuing to build this program. We talk about all the work that the coaches do and the student athletes and the recruiting, and all those things matter. Of course, we got the new building going up across the way, but making sure that our fans stay engaged and stay a part of this, it does make an incredible difference.
That building, every time I drive by there, I say it seems like it gets higher.
Yeah, I don't know it's going to get any higher now. I think it's about as high as it's going to go. The footprint's really about finished now. In fact, I think we're supposed to be finishing up with the steel here in the next week or so, which is exciting. But it's amazing how fast it has taken shape and really started to now look like the design that we put together here over the last year plus.
What's the timing on when it would be completed?
Well, this time next year we'll be in it. We're scheduled to be in it in time for the start of the 2019 season. I know talking to the guys, talking to the coaches, they're all incredibly excited. It's been helpful in recruiting. It's one thing to show people drawings, but to be able to walk out the front door and point to the steel and let them – obviously we're not going to stop in the middle of it, so they know those recruits, that's the building they're going to know. They're really not going to ever spend much time in the current space, and it's exciting the way it'll really blend together our indoor space and our outdoor grass fields and the stadium. It's going to be a game changer for the program.
How do you like this preseason camp setup between St. Mary's and Florida Avenue? It's a little bit different than Camp Rantoul in the fact that it's right here at your fingertips.
It is a little bit different, but I like it. This is our second year here, and especially after we get into the new space next year. If I were a coach, I wouldn't want to leave that building either,
right,
in terms of the meeting opportunities and the locker rooms and the sports medicine facilities. You're not going to be able to recreate that somewhere else. And so to be able to get on the school buses and take the short drive down here to the rec field, I think is a really nice combination of different assets we have here on campus. And I think it helps. Hopefully our fans will come out in the same numbers that they did last year. It was fun to come out a year ago and see folks up on the hillside there and see people in lawn chairs and in their cars watching practice. And I hope as we get deeper into the training camp, we'll see folks come out and support the team.
Josh, always good to visit with you. Thanks for your time.
Guys, thanks for having us on. Thanks for being here. We really do appreciate it.
I'd like to maybe urge you not to get the urge to put the pads back on as you get closer to the field over there.
Trust me. It's what's the Toby Keith song? I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
Right.
I think I've got one play, and that would be about the end of it. So, no, I'm going to stand here on the sidelines and feel good about being able to go for a run later on today. So
thanks,
that's about
Josh.
It. Okay, guys,
thanks,
thank
Josh.
You.
Appreciate it. Athletic Director Josh Whitman leading us off here on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk on this August the 4th. Still to come, we'll talk things over with Jason Hegemeyer. Martin O'Donnell will stop by as well. James Kirkland, the Director of Football Player Personnel. Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News. Robert Rosenthal from Illini.com, all scheduled to be on with us at some point here before 11 o'clock. We're also going to hear from Rod Smith, the offensive coordinator, and the newest of the quarterbacks. Well, not the newest, but one of the new quarterbacks, A.J. Bush. Had a chance to visit with him a little bit after practice session number one. In case you missed the baseball scores from yesterday and last night, the Cubs beat the Padres 5-4. The Pirates beat the Cardinals 7. St. Louis left 16 or 17 men on base in that ballgame, and Dexter Fowler broke his foot, so he's out for a while. And the White Sox beat Tampa Bay 3-2 in 10 innings. There's a three-way tie atop the board at the Bridgestone Invitational on the PGA Golf Tour. Ian Poulter, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Thomas, all 11 under par. In the 3M Championship on the Champions Tour, the Seniors Tour up in suburban Minneapolis, Mike Small is tied for 19th. He had a first round 3 under par 69, and that puts him at 3 under minus 8 leads that. We'll take our first time out on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. When we come back, we'll hear some comments from A.J. Bush, the quarterback, and Rod Smith, the offensive coordinator for the Fighting Illini. Stay with us. We're back with more after this.
Put your trust in Manold.
I'm your knowledge of farm real estate, appraisals and management, and explore estate planning tips for ag professionals. For complete details, visit Busey.com or call 217-351-2744. Busey, your dream, our promise. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk, everybody, powered by Illini Pella. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate, Ed Bond with us here. There's plenty of room out here if you'd like to come out and watch some of this practice that began about 25 minutes ago. It'll go till 11 o'clock or shortly thereafter. Practice number two. They went yesterday afternoon, Lauren, 3-5, and then kind of a quick turnaround here. We'll see that a couple of times during the next month, but to kind of get a chance to see if they're holding anybody back a little bit, like Mike Dudek. I know he's out here. I haven't seen any drills yet going
That's
on.
That's one of the things that I've noticed, is everybody's full go, I think, today. I mean, we saw Kendrick Green have a little bit of a problem. It looked like he might have had a cramp late in practice yesterday, but he's back running with the first unit, which is kind of a bit of news. He's on the starting five at guard in the offensive line, and they've moved Palczewski to tackle, which is interesting. They like Green a lot. He redshirted last year. We don't know much about him. You know, he was on the defensive side in spring, but they decided over the spring, and in the summer, they decided to move him to offensive guard.
if he's playing left guard mostly yesterday, that offensive line situation had Low at left tackle, Green at left guard, Kramer at center, Allegretti at right guard, and Pasluski, as you mentioned, at right tackle.
And last year's starter in the offensive line, Boyd, Larry Boyd, has moved. He was at tackle yesterday. Today I've seen him some at guard. So they're evidently, it looks to me like they're getting him ready for either position. If somebody has a problem, he could go either way.
Getting most of the quarterback reps in the first practice. You got to start somewhere, right? Cam Thomas, who was here in the spring, maybe has a little bit of an advantage of getting a better look at the playbook of Rod Smith. And, of course, he played in four or five games last year. And the other guy is A.J. Bush. I think I knew this, but I've forgotten. He's a left-hander.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives it. And since we hadn't seen him all summer, that was our first look at him yesterday.
You say Lavery was the last left-handed quarterback we had?
Or well, Walter Young
Walter
was.
Walter Young was briefly, wasn't he, before he went to end?
Briefly.
Yeah.
And Tim Lavery was a left-handed quarterback that played not a lot, but mm-hmm. some.
Yeah,
and he was
not very often you get a left-hander, and I don't know if it changes anything, but at least Rod Smith said it didn't really change anything.
Well, I know the guy at Wisconsin looks awful effective to me, and he's a left-hander.
Yeah.
So occasionally you do see them, and you think of Steve Young, one of the Hall of Fame quarterbacks, was a left-hander. But had a chance to visit with A.J. Bush on being here. He said, I've kind of been a ghost here the last few months because I've been here, but nobody's really seen me.
Yep.
Here's what he had to say about that first practice yesterday.
Oh, it feels great, man. Like, I took a semester off from Virginia Tech last year, so it's good to just be back with a team and, you know, be in an organized situation. A lot of things sold me about Illinois. With Rod Smith coming in, that was the biggest factor, honestly. But he really helped my decision because...
4-225, Steve. This is a guy that... he's smart. He's got a good, strong left arm. He can run and showed he could run in previously. So he kind of fits the bill. And the other thing to remember is that Rod Smith, has known him since he was in high school. So this is a guy that, you know, they've got a history with and they've never been together before. But he's known about him. He's followed him. Rod Smith has followed Bush. And now Bush gets his chance. This is his fifth year. This is it for him. And I think most of the people in the media that I've talked to feel like he might be the number one guy before it's all over.
Look to me, and what I saw yesterday, and again, it was the first day of practice, but I thought he had the strongest arm of the group that I saw.
Yeah, I couldn't tell that, but he's got a good arm, I'm sure.
Here's Rod Smith on A.J. Bush.
Did some good stuff for his first time, and made some big plays at times, made some plays we got to get corrected. So pretty typical, but, you know, you can tell he's a veteran-type kid, and how he handled himself pretty well. Obviously, he's got a skill set, but he's also his mindset. You know, when we was in the process of talking to him, I was just thoroughly impressed at his approach to the game, of how, you know, how he handles himself, how football is super important to him. And that was big to me because, you know, when you play the quarterback position, you're taking on the leadership of the other team. And you got to have that mindset, man, and A.J. has that.
That's Rod Smith, offensive quarterback, and A.J. Bush, as we said, a transfer, a fifth-year grad transfer. He spent time at Nebraska briefly and then junior college and then Virginia Tech, so he's been around a little bit, hasn't played 30 games or anything like that.
He said one interesting thing. He said, you know, if you're a defensive tackle and you're second team, you may be playing a half or a third of the game. If you're the number two quarterback, you might not play at all 4 weeks. And he said he's just looking for a place to play, basically, because he's wound up second at both at Nebraska and he wound up second at Virginia Tech.
931 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, Illini Pella, Saturday Sports Talk on the air with you. We'll take a timeout here at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk more Illinois football. Ticket manager Jason Hegemeyer is standing by. He'll hop on the air with us when we come back. Stay with us on Illini Pella, Saturday Sports Talk.
Hi, it's Dave Gentry. Join him on the DWS Morning Show for United Way Sue Gray. That's Monday morning on DWS.
On my fellow Saturday Sports Talk continues with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. We are at Illinois football practice. We've heard from AD Josh Whitman. Also some comments from quarterback A.J. Bush, offensive coordinator Rod Smith. We're with you until 11 o'clock, which is about the exact same duration of this practice session number two for the Illini. They're on the field right now, most of them on the field closest to St. Mary's Avenue if you're out and about. Your best bet, though, is to park on the other side, on the Florida Avenue side, and work your way around if you want to watch practice. Associate AD and ticket manager Jason Heckemeyer joins us. How you doing, big fella?
I'm doing great today.
Keeping busy these days and getting things fired up, right?
Yeah, I think I just mentioned I feel like summer's over, right? I mean, we're getting back in the swing of things. It's fun to be out here again on the fields, seeing practice again, and things are starting to amp up again. And, you know, I myself, this is good for me too, right? Because I've been busy for a while, and this kind of pulls it all together and reminds you why you do what you do.
How are ticket sales going, and does the start of fall practice amp that up a little bit?
Yeah, you know, so we'll start with ticket sales, right? I mean, I think for the opener, we're looking at a crowd of about 35,000 to 40,000. We have some work to do. I mean, if we're real, you know, we need people to get back on board. And you know, with the start of fall camp, that always means that, you know, football is back in people's minds, and people like yourselves are starting to talk football a lot more. And it just happens around the community. I think this is kind of like the start of it all. But, you know, we're being aggressive. We're putting out some good ticket deals again, but we got work to do. We got to build a fan base, and we need them. I mean, we're trying to rebuild the football program, and we also need the fans are a big part of that, and the atmosphere in the stadium is a big deal. And when recruits come in, we need that place to be jumping.
I noticed you have a number of deals, as we might call them. What's the best deal if you want to attend, let's say, the first couple of games?
Yeah, so the thing is, I like to say, is we got options, right? Uh-huh. I mean, every time I talk to somebody, it's like, what are you looking for? So still sitting in the horseshoe is still a really, really good value, $119 for the entire season. But we also have heard from people that don't want to sit in the end zone. So we created in the west balcony and the east balcony, we created a ticket special that's an iFun 4-pack. Those are 4 season tickets, includes parking, and that's $299. So do the math on that one. That's a crazy deal, right? So we're trying to get people in. We're trying to create points of entry for people that may not have had season tickets before.
What's the deal where you actually sign up for tickets but you don't know where you're going to sit? Now, that one.
Okay, so that's the mobile pass. And yeah. That's been really, really popular in basketball. It hasn't quite caught on yet in football, and I don't know why, because it's a heck of a deal. So what you're talking about is for $99, you're going to get a ticket for every single home football game. Now, you don't get to pick that location. We're mm-hmm. going to send that to you 48 hours before the game.
And it's that's the best you can get at that point. Huh?
It's depending on what's available at that right. moment in time. We're going to send that to you. So for people that don't care about having a fixed seat every single game, this is a great deal. And it, like I said, it hasn't quite caught on in football yet. We had 1,100 of them sold for men's basketball last year. So it's for those people that are okay moving around, getting different viewpoints, this is a really attractive thing. And typically we'll see a lot of younger people do that. But the way it's all worked, I think people are starting to see how smooth and how easy it is. And I do expect it to grow. We just need to tell more people about it in football.
Visiting with Jason Heckemeyer, the phone line, by the way, is open 356-9397. Rest of the way on Saturday Sports Talk. I'm sure you're like a lot of us, that you can't wait for the day that Illinois football ticket's the toughest ticket in town to get, and you gotta build towards that and have that as one of your goals at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think look, I came to Illinois because I wanted to help grow something, and it's a great university, it's a great town, it's a great program, there's great people here, but I also wanted to be a part of something that was growing, and you know, we did that. When we went to the Rose Bowl, you'll remember those crowds. Those yep. were great crowds. Our fans are great, and they will show up. We just have to rebuild again and get some excitement going in that program again, and they will come back and buy. I would say this, though. Some of my best friends in the industry are at other places. You know, one of my first roommate in college athletics is the ticket manager at Alabama, okay? We're great friends. Now, our jobs are totally different, okay? But if you talk to him and if you spend a half hour with him, he will tell you different problems he has because he doesn't have availability, right? So I don't look at it as like, boy, all my problems would be solved if we would just, you know, win a bunch of games and sell everything out. I think it's just different, right? And so every job has its different challenges, and right now I'm enjoying the process. And I hope I get to that point. I hope I get to sit down with Chris from Alabama and say, like, all right, tell me about away games. Tell me about how much demand there is for away games, right? I mean, so that would be fun to do. But make no mistake about it, every job, every person in my role at different schools, we all have a set of issues that we're dealing with. And you know what? I like what we're doing here. I like being part of something that's growing.
Talk about Chicago. We got a game against South Florida, third game of the season. What's your involvement up there?
Yeah, so we're trying really hard to, you know, it's hard to break the ice up there in terms of getting messaging out about a football game. There's so much to do up there, and there's so much news up there. You know, we've been actively working with our season ticket holders. We've been active in putting out the information to our database of people for that game. We are working with the Alumni Association. They've been great partners, and they're going to start sending out info to all of their members and friends. And so we're working on it. We're hitting it pretty hard. We need a group of a core Illini people to get up there to Soldier Field to see us. So, you know, that's a work in progress.
You know, it seems like when Purdue, for example, everybody goes to the game, knowing it's going to be a toss-up. But the first two games, Illinois will be a big favorite, and the next home game is against Penn State, which Illinois will be a big underdog. How do those factors, the fact that the games aren't maybe considered to be toss-ups, affect the attendance?
Yeah, Look, if you talk to people, they're going to tell you they're going to look at the quality of opponent, and that's going to be a more attractive game to them every single time. I don't think anybody ever looks at, like, let's go to this one because it's a slam dunk win. I do think the opener has a lot of attractiveness just on its own because we've all been waiting for football to start. Mm-hmm. And so regardless of opponent, it's the ritual. It's the Saturday afternoon. It's the I've been waiting all summer for this, and I've been reading about this now for 3 or 4 weeks. I'm going to get out there and get to the game. The crowds you always worry about are the second game because everybody got that out of their system, and it just depends on where the team's at, what your opponent is. And I feel really good about us this year having a night game and having a regional opponent with Western where they'll draw some people too. So we're going to do some – you'll see us do some things around that game to make sure people are fired up about it. But the night game is going to – in itself is going to
help. Penn State's a night game.
Penn State's also a Friday night game.
That's exactly right. And people are fired up about Penn State coming into town. And to date, that is the one that we've seen the most people interested in.
Big Ten opener, quality opponent. Night game, Friday night game. There's a lot going on around that one.
There's a lot to hype up that game with, and we'll take advantage of that. And so far, right now, that is the game that's the most popular with all.
What's that starting time?
8:00.
That's awful rough for people in Chicago and Springfield.
Yeah, but Lauren, I think if you take a look at our crowds, I'm just being honest. We always talk about the impact of Chicago, but. Uh-huh. When you take a look at the base of our ticket holders, they're really coming from 75 miles, 80 miles out. There's no doubt that we do hit Chicago hard, and there are people that come from the suburbs down. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that most of our crowds are people that are coming from within 2 hours driving distance. We're not dependent on that crowd just for our home games.
That's the tough when the game ends after 11 o'clock. I mean,
sure. Well, it's tough for everyone.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's tough for everyone.
Tough for a newspaper. We can't get it in the paper.
Yeah.
Another minute or two with Jason Hegemeyer. You said earlier that you've got some work to do on football tickets, but how would you compare what you've seen so far with previous years? Average? Running behind? A little bit ahead? Or what?
I'd say we're a little behind, but I wouldn't nothing that we're extremely worried about, but we are a little behind, and some of that might just have to do with timing or buying behaviors.
Sure.
But you know, we do have work to do. We've had work to do the last few years, to be frank. You know, we have availability, and we need to do a good job of letting people know what we have and how they can get involved, and as the team does its job and gets better and starts putting a great product on the field, this stuff is, we have to have pricing and ticket buying opportunities ready to go so that we're ready to take advantage of that as soon as our team starts to do that uptick.
What's your involvement with the suites? I mean, in some of those, I know I've heard that they're coming due after 10 years. Is it 10 years really since
I think it is 10 years. You know, I'm not that involved in it. We do have a premium seating office within the department that handles all of that. So I'm not that involved with the suites. I just fulfill.
Are some available as far as you know? For
there are
one,
some available.
One at a time.
I don't know how many there are, but there are some available. I would, before we get off, I would want to mention the new policy this year, the clear bag policy.
Right.
Yeah, we're switching to that, and that's something that's, you know, just an enhanced safety measure that we're seeing around the country. It's happened at NFL games. It's happened at most of our Big Ten peer institutions where you can't bring backpacks into the stadium anymore. You can't bring large purses. It has to be in a clear plastic bag.
The purse does?
Well, yes. And there are sizes. If you get people that buy tickets from us, they're going to get a little bit an insert that educates them on what is allowed and what's not allowed inside the stadium. It's a big change. There is a, my wife calls it a clutch. I don't know what a clutch is. I know it's 4.5 by 7 inches.
Really?
That's the biggest purse that's going to be allowed inside the stadium. Otherwise, things will have to be in a clear bag. And we're doing stuff for season ticket holders. Every account's going to get a free one from us. They're going to get a coupon where they can take it to game day, get an Illini.
Really?
Yeah, they'll get an Illini branded clear bag. We'll have them available, you know, at game day and at our events that they can purchase as well. But you're going to want to do that in advance, right? You're not going to want to come to the game with your bag. Buy a plastic bag, walk back to your car. You need to do that kind of stuff in advance.
You mean you're going to be able to see what's in my wife's purse? That might not allow her in.
Well, I think you better have a conversation with her then, Lauren. Now,
I've watched her just trying to find the keys in there. I mean, it's one chance in 100.
That conversation probably shouldn't be on the air. So maybe you ought to take that home and talk that over. Anything new on basketball tickets?
No, we're in the middle of renewals right now, and we're doing really good on that. There's a lot of promise, a lot of progress. People are coming back. They're renewing at a high rate, which is really cool to see. And I think it reflects the excitement that people have with Coach Underwood and the job that he's doing. I mean, you know, we going into it, it's hard to educate people about it. We only had 4 returning starters. You know, there's a little bit of ambiguity as to who's going to play, what's that going to be. But at the same time, I think people like the players we brought in, and I think they're excited to see. I mean, there's a little bit now of a hey, who do you think it'll be? There's a lot of conversation, which I think does spur interest and excitement. So that's been good so far.
Good to see you, Jason. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me out.
You
appreciate
bet.
It.
Jason Heckemeyer, ticket manager for Illinois football, basketball, sports, actually. He handles the ticket operation. We'll take a timeout. We'll talk some more Illinois football. Martin O'Donnell is here to watch some practice, and we'll get him on the air to talk about the Illini and the offensive line in particular. Stay with us. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues after this.
This is Brian Barnhart. I'll be off on Monday on Penny for Your Thoughts. Mary Schenck will be the guest host from News Gazette Media. Among her guests will be Judge Tom DeFonis. Monday, Mary Schenck filling in for me on Penny on DWS.
On IPELO, Saturday Sports Talk continues from Illinois football practice on a very nice Saturday, August the 4th. With Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. We've visited already with Josh Whitman and ticket manager Jason Heckemeyer, our radio analyst colleague and former Illini All-American offensive lineman. Martin O'Donnell is here with Michael O'Donnell. I guess it looks to me like Michael's in charge here, Martin.
Yeah, we like to let him think he is. Yeah, 4-year-olds have a way of running the world.
Well, he's out at football practice. I'm sure this is not his first football practice.
No, we've been out to practice a couple times, but always fun. Just a nice little Saturday morning at breakfast at Mary Ann's and then worked our way over here.
And the good news is Michael looks a lot like his mother.
Thank goodness. Yeah, I know. Both of our kids are very fortunate in that respect.
Well, here we are, year 3 of the Lovie Smith era. What are you looking for the most? When you come out to practice, obviously you focus on the offensive line, and there's been a little shuffling going on there.
Yeah, certainly. There's been a little bit of shuffling. It looks like they got Palcheski out at tackle and moving Kendrick Green from the defensive side over to the offensive side. I mean, every time I come out to practice, I start with the offensive line. Some of that's just kind of selfish, but that's also, I think, you know, the game of football really is won and lost in the trenches. So looking at the offensive line, watching the defensive line, and then, you know, really with this camp, I think the big question mark is the quarterback position. So that's the piece that's kind of exciting to me is, you know, getting out here, getting a chance to look. I mean, they don't have pads on or anything else like that, but just looking at how these guys spin it.
Does it make any difference being left-handed, Bush being a left-handed passer?
I mean, you know, granted, I didn't catch many passes in my time at U of I, but I mean, the ball comes out a little bit different. I think it depends. You know, quarterbacks generally have an easier time rolling to the side of their arm is, so right-handed quarterbacks, easier for them to roll right. Left-handed quarterbacks, easier for them to roll to the left and throw.
Therefore, you as a blocker, would you have to be aware of that?
Not really.
And not in the back of your mind?
No, not really. I mean, it would be, you know, you're going to run those plays more frequently, but, it's, you know, in practice, you know, if you – you know, if it's a bootleg, it's a bootleg, right? It's not that big of a deal. I think it would just change a little bit. You know, it comes out a little bit different for a left-handed quarterback than a right-handed quarterback, so it could make a difference for the receivers just catching the ball, getting the ball out of their hands in terms of tracking it with their eyes.
Yeah, and I heard somebody mention yesterday that the spin on the ball is different coming from the left hand. For the receivers, it spins a
little
bit.
Spin the other way. Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
And if you can catch it, you can catch it, right?
Yeah, if you can catch it, you can catch it. If it's there, it's there. But, yeah, I think that's one of the good things here about that's his, you know, A.J. Bush's first time, you know, really being able to throw with these guys. So, you know, camp is a lot about that. So interested to see, you know, Cam Thomas, A.J. Bush, who kind of emerges there, or are one of these freshmen going to step up and force their way onto the field?
Do you see the freshman being more – this year being spotted as opposed to being the central issue? Because all of these sophomores are coming back that were starters, bigger than, you know, they hope to start again.
Yeah, I think they hope to start again, but you know, I think it's increasing competition, which is what it's all about, and you know, getting more athletes, getting good players out there. And then the other thing, too, that's always fun to watch with camp is a lot of times you'll see upperclassmen, somebody who it just hasn't clicked for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, I'm interested to see if there's a guy like that this year that kind of steps up and really forces a role on the field, because I think these coaches are going to play the best 22 guys.
It always happens. You know, there's always somebody that pops up. You know,
always.
Every time. It might be a walk-on. Might be anybody that a second-teamer. I mean, the green thing's a little bit of a surprise, because he redshirted last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we expected that he'd be starting, you know, right off the bat this year or on offense. So that's already one change. What it indicates to me is the coaches know a lot more about what's going on in the summer than we do.
And you're surprised by that, Lauren?
No, but I mean, they make decisions before, you know, during the course of the summer.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, because some of the NCAA rules allow the coaches to technically be around the players a lot more than they used to, so that certainly factors in. But, you know, I think any time you think about a guy like Kendra Green, he's been on campus for 12 months now. So, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. End of the season, you're probably not going to switch too much stuff. You decide to make a red shirt, and, you know, I think they have an idea when they come out of spring ball kind of where things stand and where they need depth. And so it's good to see the offensive line with a little bit of depth now, because that's been a big issue for them.
You mentioned something always happens that you don't expect. It was, what, 5 years ago at Camp Rantoul when we were watching Illinois play up there, and we were looking at that young number 18 catching everything that was thrown to him. Mike Dudek.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
Mike's still here, but that kind of sent us scrambling, figuring out who he was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, like I said, that's always the fun stuff, is just kind of seeing guys emerge. And, you know, I also really like to try, you know, early in camp here, it's nice to kind of, I try to come in at kind of somewhat regular intervals, and you can literally see guys progress. You can see guys kind of fall off. You know, sometimes, you know, with every team, there's guys that are great in shorts and not pads, but you get the shoulder pads on, you get the helmets on, and sometimes there's some guys that fall back a little bit, there's guys that step up. So it's always fun to just kind of watch the progression of camp. And for me, you know, selfishly as well, with the broadcast in the fall, that's really important, is being able to kind of chart some of the progression, especially as this remains one of the youngest rosters in FBS.
This is going to be your fourth year on the broadcast?
Fourth year, yep, yep.
Time flies, doesn't it?
I know, can't wait.
Brian and I will be starting our 17th on the radio network broadcast. He, of course, does the play-by-play. I handle the pregame, halftime, postgame. So the Big Ten media days and the start of practice is kind of the end of summer.
Yeah, and the start of the season.
There you go. It won't be long. Do you remember your first preseason fall camp? It was at Rantoul, I'm guessing.
Yeah, right? Yeah, they were all at Rantoul. I certainly remember parts of it. You know, and it's a big adjustment. I think a lot of times people discount how big of a transition it is for football players going from high school to college. And I mean, because it's not just athletics, it's not just academics, but it's the whole social thing on your own for the first time. And, you know, when you kind of get all of that thrown at you, along with 2 days and those things, it's an interesting combination, but it's a good learning experience.
Yeah, if you can survive that as a freshman, then you got a chance. That's why this team's got a chance, because all the guys that played last, now I'd say we lost 16 players, by the way, since last season, but none of the freshmen.
Right.
The freshmen that are now sophomores, that they've stuck together, and I think they feel like they're the nucleus. I think there's a camaraderie there that, and I will say this, that most of the players who left, nearly all of the players who left, weren't going to play a lot or at all anyway.
Yeah.
There were a couple that
Yeah, there were some. And I think you also have guys. I mean, sometimes there's guys just kind of want to change the scenery. And, you know, I never begrudge anybody for doing what they think is best, because clearly there's a lot going on with all these guys, more so than what we see on Saturdays in the fall. But you're right. I mean, some of those guys, you know, we're going to have to compete for positions. And but at the same time, you lose a lot of veteran depth that you were counting on. And, you know, that's what it's up to, you know, Lovie and his staff to just kind of, you know, work through and find that depth and find the next guys up, because they've done a really nice job of identifying and acquiring talent.
Not only are you a football analyst, you're a football fan.
Sure.
So you're like all of us. Have you thought much or watched much about the Ohio State situation, and how do you think that might pan out?
I mean, I saw some people write this, and I think this is true, and to a certain extent, I think it's, you know, we've seen it with other kind of scandals in collegiate athletics. I mean, college football coaches are some of the most detail-oriented people that I've ever come across, and they know everything that is happening in and around their program, both with the players and the coaches. And, you know, they know the local law enforcement community, especially somebody like an Urban Meyer in a Columbus, Ohio. I mean, they know everything that's going on. So it'll ultimately be very interesting to see what happens. I think he should be gone. That's my personal opinion. I don't think you can, you know, condone that kind of stuff. And but it's always interesting to see people weigh human cost versus, you know, athletic excellence. I'm dubious of some of these institutions, but we'll see what happens. It is certainly an evolving situation with all the stuff that came out yesterday, too.
Well, you talk about victims. There's really only one victim in that situation, and that's
Well, and unfortunately, nobody's talking about her.
Right.
You know, and their family, and that's not the focus. And
Urban Meyer certainly is not a victim of losing a $7.5 million a year
Urban
job.
Urban Meyer is going to be fine. The AD there, from a financial perspective, is going to be fine. But yeah, I think people lose sight of the human cost of that, and so certainly it'll be interesting to see how that plays out here.
Another minute or so with Martin O'Donnell. Back to the field. We talked about the offensive line. We talked about the quarterback. Let's talk a little bit about the running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And are these Big Ten caliber running backs? I don't know that we know that yet for sure.
Well, I think they are. I mean, I think we saw some really nice thing. I think based upon what we saw with some of these guys as freshmen last year, you know, I thought Mike Epstein did a really nice job. You know, clearly the running game was a huge issue last year, and that's not just on the running backs. That's on the offensive line, the offensive scheme, everything. You know, Epstein goes down pretty early in the season, and he still ends the season as your leading rusher.
Right, right.
That's a problem. I thought we saw some really nice things from Ravon Bonner. I'm excited to see what he does. Reggie Corbin, I haven't been able to watch enough personnel here. I know they've been using him in the slot a little bit, but I think Corbin brings a nice element to it. And I'm just really interested to see how Rod Smith deploys the weapons that are on this Illinois offense, because I do think the weapons in terms of skill positions this year are by far the best that Lovie's had here in his several seasons. So I'm interested to see how they get deployed. Interested to obviously see you know, who emerges kind of at the quarterback position, and just really want to see this offense click in camp is what I'm really hoping.
That's Martin O'Donnell. Sound effects provided by Michael O'Donnell, who is along for the ride today. Appreciate your time, my friend. Always good to see you, and look forward to working with you again this fall.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to.
Moving up on the top of the hour, 10 o'clock, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Hour number two is coming up next. Stay with us. Well, Saturday Sports Talk continues from Illinois football practice. Hour number two with you until 11 o'clock. We've heard from Josh Whitman, the AD, the ticket manager, Jason Hegemeyer. Our radio analyst, former Illinois All-American offensive lineman Martin O'Donnell, joined us just before that break. Now James Kirkland, the director of player personnel, is with us. James, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
This is perfect football weather, isn't it?
Sustained. Not too hot. Got a little breeze. Feels like California with a touch more humidity.
Give us a little rundown of your background. You've been here, this is your third year here, but were you some of your stops that you've made before you came here?
I started in tackle football with the Atlanta Falcons. Did a year there as an intern. wasn't a great year. Mike Vick got hurt, so it changes things a little bit. After that, I went back to Duke, be a graduate assistant.
You played at Duke, right?
Played at Duke University. And then after Duke, got a job with the Cleveland Browns, did some pro and college scouting over the next 6 years. Left there, went to Chicago, did 3 years of college and pro scouting in Chicago, then spent a year in Tennessee as a pro scout, and a couple years back in Cleveland after that, doing both pro and college scouting.
So how far back do you go with Lovie Smith?
That would take us back to 2010. I got hired there 2010 season, and we had a good year there. Mostly during those times, the pro scouts, they basically kept us in broom closets, and we basically all we did was eat film all day, all night. That's what we did. So it was a really good experience. I got a chance to learn Levy's defense and, you know, get a bead for the thing, for his likes and dislikes. And so when we left Chicago, after we went 10-6 and he was let go that year, after that, we actually just kept in touch. I would see him out. We would talk every now and again. And just so happened, when he got let go in Tampa Bay, I got let go shortly in Cleveland. And he said, hey, you know, I have an opening at Illinois. Would you consider coming here? And I didn't have to think long.
you mentioned that Lovie has certain things about his defense that he likes, players that he likes over others. How does that differ?
Well, when I was in Cleveland, I worked under Romeo Crennel. Romeo Crennel was on the Bill Parcells tree. We were 3-4, 2-gap. Basically, it was about build the wall, the edge. And we played with really big people. Sean Rogers was out nose.
That was a 3-4, though.
Base 3-4.
Okay.
Base 3-4.
Now we're almost using only two linebackers now from four.
Exactly. So the defense in Chicago with Lovie and Marinelli, Coach Smith and Marinelli, that defense, it was smaller, quicker, more about disruption, and more about playing the pass and taking them away. So it was just a different look. Like, the defensive front looked completely different under Coach Crennel than what it looked like under Coach Smith. I also worked for Butch Davis in Cleveland as well, and he ran a 4-3, but that 4-3 looked different. This one's different because of the way the linebackers and the fronts are set and how they feel from there. So you have to have quickness, disruption, get after the pass.
You told us last year when you were sitting right here that you picked up a good player in Gay that nobody knew about. Roundtree was coming in as a freshman too. You had a bunch of young. Talk about how you were able to pick those guys out.
Well, ultimately, you have to have a profile for every position. So our profiles for every position, I have profiles for every position you can have. But out of those, I can pluck, all right, these are the ones that fit best for Coach Smith's defense and now Coach Rod's offense, okay? So it makes it easier to spot a guy who fits the profile of what they want at every single
What's
position.
The profile for defensive end?
Well, it differs because there's two of them,
right.
So we have a 5 and a 6.
Okay.
Your 5 is going to be more of your heavy body, classic 4-3 left DN. He's more of a run stopper. He's going to be more of a power player than an athlete rusher. But he's got to be able to push his way to the quarterback and be able to collapse the pocket.
So okay? That's Roundtree.
That would be more Roundtree. The 5 is going to be more of your primary rusher. That's the guy that's got to be the speed, turn the corner. That's the Simeon Rices of the world.
So I'm going to run at him.
In theory, yeah, but you got to get there first. So you got to get to the edge to be able to run at him. So what we have is obviously 3 technique. We have linebackers. Those guys are trained to disrupt. Get up the field.
Talking to James Kirkland, Director of Player Personnel. I always thought that title, Director of Player Personnel, was more of a pro term. Is that a coincidence with Lovie Smith coming from the pro ranks?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you see a lot of directors of player personnel when you look around college football. And now you're seeing a little bit of a trickle from the NFL to college. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's getting to be more specialization. There's getting to be more information out there that you really need to have people that can actually go through the information and cipher it.
Is this a job that might put you on a path to be a coach, or is this, are you kind of on the administrative side, or are you in the niche that you want to be in, or what's your dream situation?
Well, I started with the Falcons, and I worked for a young lad named Les Snead. It was Les Snead under Ron Hill with the Falcons. Les Snead asked me very early, he said, do you want to be a scout or a coach? You can't be both. You can't
do
swap back
go,
and
yeah,
forth.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, hey, I want to be a scout. I thought that it's what I like to do. I like to evaluate players. I like to watch football and say, man, that guy moves different from everybody else.
That spends a lot of time on the film, watching film, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It's monotonous and it's a thankless job, but I enjoy it. I really enjoy doing it.
Well, you brought in a couple of guys that are two of the standouts on this freshman team, and Avery and Virtus Brown. Mm. And my big concern is, where's the next Avery and Virtus Brown coming from? I don't see them on the new recruiting list. You got somebody in mind? Have you got somebody that you're holding out on?
I mean, we always have people in mind. And, I mean, a lot of this really, you know, the coaching staff does a really good job of setting the table now. They do a good job of getting out here and beating the bushes and saying, hey, you know, hey, this guy doesn't have a lot, but I think he's a guy we ought to take a look at because this guy really looks the part. He looks like he would fit what we do. And then, hey, we take off from there over in my side of things. So, the coaches have done a good job with that. So we'll be able to find players to fill the gaps.
How much do you count on senior film, guys that haven't played yet or just be playing in a couple of weeks, as opposed to, you know, up to now, everything seems to me like you've been, you're working on what you've seen in the past.
Yeah, you work on junior film quite a bit, but I can say for me personally, like, I want to see what they do as a senior. I got it that first 3 weeks, it's going to be a hard push to see what guys are doing all across the country in those first 3 weeks. Guys that the coaches have targeted, that we said we like we want to see what they do their senior years.
Well, what percentage important. Are already gone of the senior class? I mean, I think a high percentage have already committed, haven't they?
They have committed, but as you know in recruiting, just because you're committed doesn't mean you're all done and signed, sealed, delivered. A lot of guys flop. Look, we still have on our board, we still have the guys that are committed. We still have to recruit those guys. They haven't signed anything yet. They're not on campus yet. They haven't finished their academics yet. So we're diligent about the guys that have said, hey, I'm committed to you. We're diligent about making sure that we keep those guys in-house. Because you got to know other schools are still going to go after them. I mean, Marquez Beeson is an excellent football player. You think these schools aren't going to continue to offer him? They will.
About all you can say about Marquez Beeson is that we've offered him. We're recruiting him. That's all.
That's it.
Legally.
That's it. So, in all, I mean, he's a guy that we're going to recruit to the very end. You know, and we have to. That's the bottom line.
Talking with Director of Player Personnel, James Kirkland, how many folks do you have working with you? And give us an idea of a typical day with you guys. You mentioned the watching the film, but I'd like to know how many guys you have with you and how things go in a typical day.
Well, right now it's five of us in the room.
Mm-hmm. Not a broom closet, right?
Not a broom closet, but it's five of us in the room. And basically we meet every morning just to touch base. Hey, what's really going on? Most of my work is done in the broom closet, watching tape. And so we meet in the morning, just touch base. Who do we need to talk to? Did anything happen overnight? What's going on social media?
Well, do you assign the coaches when you see something, you say so-and-so should be there to see him or bring in the coach to watch the film?
Pat and I will work together setting the table for that sort of thing. But a lot of times the coaches do a good job now. They've watched guys. They have an understanding of who they are. They've already talked to the coach in that area. Hey, have you seen him? What does he look like? That sort of thing. And we'll have staff meetings every once in a while to just make sure that we're on the same page about certain players. But a lot of it's done very informally. A lot of it's very informal in terms of, hey, we're going to get together at 2 o'clock. We've got to talk about these three guys. And we'll get together as a staff and talk about them.
So when you're watching practice as you are today,
mm-hmm.
you're watching what you have here now, but you're thinking about what's next, right? You're thinking about guys that are still in high school.
Yeah, I mean, it's a puzzle.
What kind of surprises do you get seeing the guys out here that you brought in? I mean, you knew certain things about them when you brought them in, but you didn't know everything.
Well, it's you try to learn as much as you can. And actually, you know, I'd like to think one of my strengths is being able to see a lot on the tape. It's amazing how much you can get about a kid's personality just from watching them play tackle football. Is he a competitor? Is he a me guy? Is he a tough guy? Is he going to stick his face in the fan? There are a lot of things you find out just by observing a guy and how he handles the game. Is he a coachable dude? Does he work at it? Is he in condition? Like, there's any number of things you can find on the tape, but we have a few things that we focus on that we think will help our program.
You know, I think a lot of people, when they think of coaches watching tape, and this regard, recruiting tapes and such, you're not looking at a highlight tape. You're looking at a game tape, right? You can see how a guy reacts to
absolutely.
To a not a good play. You're not just looking at all his best plays.
Absolutely. I mean, the highlight tapes can be very deceiving.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw one highlight tape. This guy has a one-handed catch as the first play. So I go and I look at the game. First of all, it's out of bounds, and second of all, I didn't catch it. So, the highlight tape is meant to grab your attention,
sure.
Particularly
but,
early.
But watching regular tapes, how much can you learn about a defensive safety, for example?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I've seen tapes where he might not even be in the picture when the ball snapped.
Sure. You have to be focused on a few things that you're looking for, okay? When the ball is thrown on the back end, if they're in cover three, where is he? Does he show up? How quickly does he react? Can he get to the sideline? Will he stick his face in the fan when it's a running back that's broken clear? How does he handle open field tackling situations? So you have to know – the main thing is you have to know what you're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, then it's just like watching football on TV. But if you're watching the tape and you know what you're looking for, then – you can pluck certain things and say, you know what, this guy can do what we're going to ask him to do.
Hey, James, appreciate your time. Good to
Indeed.
Talk football with you. We'll
Indeed.
Do it again sometime.
Always a pleasure.
You right. Thank you, James.
Appreciate
That's
you.
James Kirkland, Director of Player Personnel, with us here at Fighting Illini Football Practice at 10:17. We'll take a break, and we'll have more for you on the Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk Show. Stay with us. Moving up on 10:20, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate, Steve Kelly with you. Ed Bond is here as well. We're at Illinois football practice, and so far this morning we've talked things over with Josh Whitman, Jason Hegemeyer, Martin O'Donnell, and Director of Player Personnel James Kirkland was the most recent guest. Until now, our friend Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com is with us. How you doing, Doug?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yep, good to see you, and you're spending a lot of time here at practice the last couple of days, and you will be for the next two or three weeks. Your thoughts on the first day and a half, I guess, of what you've seen?
Well, you know, it's typical for the first couple of days. I think the first day was just people kind of getting used to what they were doing out there. It was a little bit dragging a little bit, I thought, the first day. Tempo's picking up a lot today, I think. You know, they're moving around a lot better. Coaches are pushing them. And you're seeing a lot of team stuff really early, which I was kind of surprised with. You know, they went right into 11-on-11 yesterday and back into it today.
Don't think we're going to pick a quarterback based on one or two days of practice. But we had not seen A.J. Bush until yesterday. And your thoughts of what you saw with him?
you know, he's got a good arm. He can really fling it. If you notice, he's really good at the long ball. You know, he can throw it long. He got a big arm. He's a good athlete. Can run around. Looks really good on the read option play. And you know, it's going to be a battle, I think, in camp between Cam Thomas and AJ Bush. And I think Cam Thomas right now has a little bit better handle on the offense, just because he went through spring drills. But once Bush kind of gets up to speed and knows the offense, it's going to be a really interesting battle between those two.
What this indicates to me, when you say when they went 11 on 11 right away, is that they've done a lot of work this summer away from the coaches, that the quarterbacks basically ran, I'm sure. And you can't do that unless everybody's been working together.
Yep, they all had the playbook. They all knew what the plays were going to be. And, yeah, you know, the quarterbacks have been throwing to the wide receivers on the side without the coaches there. You could definitely tell that on day one.
What do you see in terms of the wide receivers? I want to bring up Justice Williams. He made a heck of a catch yesterday on a long pass by Bush. He gives you a new element there that we hadn't. You know, he was a linebacker before.
Yeah, he's a physical guy. You know, he's going to be a possession receiver, a guy that can use his body to get open. And you know, he did catch a couple of long passes. Ricky Smalley and Mikey Dudek obviously are the top two guys, both quick twitch wide receivers. Dudek looks fantastic. I mean, this is the best that he's looked since his freshman year in 2014, when he had that, you know, that record-breaking season. And then, you know, the local kid, Dominic Stampley, little short kid, really like him a lot. Quick feet, quick twitch guy, gets off the line of scrimmage, and just when he gets in space, he's hard to cover. You know, some of these guys like Nate Hobbs can really run. He can fly, and he had trouble sticking with Stampley. So those are kind of the top three that I saw.
We were talking previously on the show about every year there's somebody that you're not anticipating step up, and yesterday it was Dominic Stampley. Everybody was checking out the rosters. Who's this guy? Where did he come from? As you mentioned, a local guy from Centennial.
Yeah, his quickness just jumps out at you right away when you watch him go through position drills. You can just see he's a quick twitch guy. He's got the feet that you really like from a wide receiver. That gives him kind of three small guys with Smalling and Dudek and Stampley, but still three guys who can really run.
Defensively, I think the linebacking position is one of some concern and some question, as are several positions defensively. But Jake Hansen, who got hurt this time of year last year, is back and appears to be looking good so far.
Running around out there really good. Yeah, he looks like he got all of his speed back. Doesn't seem to have any ill effects from the ACL. You know, and they're playing a lot of nickel, so you see a lot of just two linebackers out there with Delshawn Phillips and Jake Hansen at linebacker, and then they go to the nickel quite a bit. That's a position that's a concern, though. There's not a lot of depth at linebacker, and I think a freshman like a Kalen Tolson might have to step in and play right away, and you see him today running with the twos.
I want to get you around to recruiting, because we just talked to Kirkland, and now he can't talk much about players that they are in the process of recruiting, but they seem to be running pretty far behind in terms of numbers for 2019. Your thoughts on that, and where do you see them finishing?
It's not going to be a big class, you know. And I think they're probably comfortable with the 10 or 11 guys that they got right now. But yeah, if you look at the Big Ten, they are behind the rest of the Big Ten, and that's a little surprising considering the way they started in the spring with the two Rivals 100 guys, Isaiah Williams from St. Louis and Marques Beeson, the DB wide receiver from Dallas, and it kind of slowed down for him, you know, throughout the summer, and they just missed on the kid yesterday, wide receiver from
Massey.
Massey from Kirkwood, Missouri. It came down to them and Mizzou, and he committed to Mizzou yesterday.
But where's the beef? That's my question. Where are the big tackles that they need?
Yeah, I mean, they're really kind of widening the net right now and offering some more kids. They're still looking at Ira Henry from St. Louis Trinity. You know, that's a school they've recruited, and that's where Isaiah Williams is from. But they missed on some kids that went to other Minnesota, and Purdue got some guys that they were after, and they need two or three offensive linemen in the class.
I would think they also need to add on the defensive side, because they've got some good freshmen, and they got the two big guys, Vertus Brown and Avery, but where do they go from there? I mean, they need to add some help there, don't they?
Two guys I think that are really at the top of their board right now are Shimon Cooper, linebacker from St. Louis.
Right.
And then Moses Okpala, another St. Louis kid, a defensive end, kid who's was a basketball player, but now he's playing football, really athletic, tall, long and lean pass rusher. And those two guys I think are their top two targets right now.
What else concerns you or focus items for you here as you supply the coverage during fall camp? What other positions are you particularly interested in?
Well, it concerns you. I talked about linebacker. I think that's a concern. Then on the offense, playmakers, you know, if anybody gets hurt, they got some guys like Dudek and Smalling, but if anybody gets hurt, you know, it's freshmen, and you don't see a lot of really fast guys out there can make people miss. And for this offense under Rod Smith, this spread offense, that's really the offense. You got to get guys in space. That's what it's designed to do, get the ball to playmakers who can miss the first tackler, you know, make the first tackler miss, get in space and make some plays. And you don't see a lot of guys out there right now like that. And maybe next year when Marques Beeson gets here, that'll change. He's a big-time player. But that's a concern right now.
Steve and I talked to Joey Bosset, the weight training coach, recently, and he said that the most outstanding people in his group that he was working out this summer were the defensive backs. And that's something that we don't seem to be putting much emphasis on. I mean, when we talk, we talk about the running backs and we talk about the quarterback. But what do you know about that situation in the secondary?
Well, I know that it's probably set more than any other position, but the four starters, you know, with Tony Adams and Nate Hobbs at corner, Bennett Williams, who was the freshman All-American last year at free safety, and then Stanley Green at the strong, that, you know, that they like that group. It's a pretty good group. They're good hard hitters. The corners are the big physical type that they like in the Tampa 2 defense. They, you know, they can stop the run. They can guard in the flat. But then when you start getting into the depth chart a little bit, now you're talking about freshmen. You're talking about the JUCO transfer, Nick Walker. So kind of unknowns when you start getting into the depth chart a little bit.
Doug, talk a little bit about your coverage and what people can see as they follow along during these next few weeks here in fall camp.
The great thing about our front page is we have a landing page for all the camp content. It's right there on the front page. You just got to click on it. It's got all of our daily video interviews with players and coaches, all of our feature articles from John Sapiney and myself, and daily camp notes on what we saw out here every day. So you can it's a one-stop shop. Just click on the front page, and it's right there for you.
Illinois.rivals.com.
That's right? It.
Okay. Hey, Doug, appreciate your time. Good to visit with you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News, rivals.com. Again, that website, illinois.rivals.com, to read his material on his fall camp central. 10:28 is our time. Saturday Sports Talk, Illini Pella, Saturday Sports Talk from football practice. They're into another phase here. They've got about 30 minutes to go, just about the same amount of time that we have to go on this edition of the show. We'll take a break and be back with more after this. Stay with us.
This is Brian Barnhart. I'll be off on Monday on Penny for Your Thoughts. Mary Shank will be the guest host from News Gazette Media. Among her guests will be Judge Tom DeFantis. Monday, Mary Shank filling in for me on Penny on DWS.
Welcome back to Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate, Ed Bond is here as well. Heading towards the 11 o'clock hour. I've had several guests on the show so far this morning. The current guest is Robert Rosenthal from IlliniBoard.com. Morning, Robert.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Keeping you busy, I'm sure. You you look forward to this time of year, don't you?
This is my favorite thing on earth. So this is Christmas morning.
So this is midway through, or a little past midway through of the second day of practice. Give us a little summation of what you've seen in the first 2 days, with the idea that they haven't put the pads on yet.
Right. I think AJ Bush is the story so far. I was, you know, when a guy bounces around that much, he went to Nebraska, he went to junior college, then he went to Virginia Tech. He didn't win the starting job at Nebraska. You just think, okay, fifth year guy, it just wasn't working out for him, whatever. But this is a legitimate Big Ten quarterback who has the skills. You know, can he read defenses? Can he be the offensive guy that can run this system? Nobody knows yet. But as far as being the leader, you know, he's easily the most confident guy out there on the field. People are already looking to him. You know, he's vocal. He's excitable. Everything you kind of want to look to from a quarterback. So that's easily the story.
And he's got Rod Smith on his side, since Rod's known him all his career.
Yes, yes.
That helps.
Yes, yes. And, you know, as you and I have talked about, Lauren, like sometimes – you know, offensive coordinators just have a certain thing they're looking for from a quarterback. They could have a four-star guy, but he just isn't the type that they want. This is my kind of guy, and I think this is Rod Smith's kind of guy.
But you know what's interesting about when we say that his last year at this time, Rod Smith was coaching at Arizona, and there was a second-team quarterback there that nobody was paying any attention to, named Tate, by the way.
Yes.
And Khalil Tate.
You have one of his jerseys?
Well, I should have. But Rod told me, he said, I never had a guy that was worse in practice.
Yeah.
We put him in a game, and he was sensational. Yeah. He was terrible in practice, great in the game. So by the third game, he was great in the games, and they left him in the games, and he was – and what they ranked third in the nation in total offense or something like that. I mean, the guy – so you don't always know from practice exactly what you're going to get, do you?
You're right. You're right. And I think it's worth noting from that offense, they were top 10 in total offense, but they were something like 118th in passing offense or whatever. Everything went from running the ball with the quarterback, which is what Smith wants to do here. Set everything up with a quarterback who can run. So it'll be interesting. Again, it's a long way between first two practices at camp – when they're in shorts and no pads, completing passes and being the confident guy, and lining up against Wisconsin's defensive line on third and eight and completing that 9-yard pass. So there's a long way to go now, but yeah, that's certainly the big thing so far.
What are you picking up otherwise?
I was watching the defensive line this morning over here in these drills. You know, it's starting to look like what a Big Ten. I always call it room, like the defensive tackle room, the defensive end room, you know, where they're doing their meetings. When they break out in these groups like this, you can evaluate everybody. And you're looking at the defensive tackles. You've got Milan. You've got Oliver. You've got Jackson, who have played a lot of football. You're bringing in Avery. You're bringing in Vertus Brown. You know, Deion Pate redshirted last year. So, Oladipo is a guy who picked Illinois over Michigan State and Penn State. So you have these Big Ten bodies who are learning the system and growing and, you know, learning their technique. There's no seniors yet, so you're still getting there. But it's starting to look like what you want these position groups to look like.
That's you brought up the seniors, and you do this kind of research. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a team that had two consecutive years with fewer than 10 seniors?
I can't find it. I looked up last year's team trying to find a team that young anywhere in college football, playing, you know, starting 16 different freshmen, playing 22 true freshmen, only having 8 seniors, and at the time 14 juniors. Now that number's down to 8. I couldn't find anything. Like, I think last year's team was historically in college football numbers one of the youngest teams. So, yeah, it's crazy.
How does the organization of these practices look? I thought yesterday it looked pretty crisp for the first one. They went right into 11-on-11 right away.
Yes. And I think that's a function of finally having an almost full roster. Even last year they only had 76 players. You know, they now have this kind of full complement of players. You know, for those that were at the spring scrimmage, they were down to 46, 44 some players, so many walk-ons out. It didn't even look like a football practice. This now looks like what a coach wants a football practice to look like. When you go in and you have all these guys, you know, for the position group breakouts, and when you're running 11-on-11 like that, and you have 8 cornerbacks you can just keep rotating in and seeing what they're doing and coach them on the sideline and send the next set of guys in, it just changes the momentum of the entire practice. So, yeah, it's starting to look like it.
I haven't done the research on this. Maybe you have, but obviously everybody knows the football rebuild takes longer than a basketball does just because of the number of players. But is there an ultimum time that you can feel like you've turned the corner and this is year 3? I mean, is it a 5-year plan or what?
I always say that the corner usually turns quickly. Because when you have a team like last year where you're starting all these freshmen and, if you look at combined starts across the whole roster, you have one of the lowest numbers in the country. But if you're starting those freshmen, when they're sophomores, they've got all these starts behind. When they're juniors, they're like the seniors on most everything. They all have 25 starts. Once they get to their final year, so this accelerates from youngest team in the country to most experienced team in the country really fast. Like, logic would dictate, if you had one of the youngest football teams in the nation in the last 20 years in 2017, then by 2020 you may have one of the most experienced college football teams in the country in years. So if that's what he's trying to build. That's the momentum.
And you know, this is me being negative, but then when you lose all those guys.
Exactly. And we've seen that before, right? And, Illinois, 2001.
There's nothing about Illinois that's going to be consistent, because now we're going to be relying on this one class.
Yep.
And right now our recruiting, and you follow this,
yep,
is way behind.
Yes.
Why is that?
It's a good question. I mean, at some point, you know, you can sell the first year. It's everything's new. We need these guys. We're going to play you right away. Even the second year, you can kind of sell it.
The
third year, these guys want to know they're going somewhere that's going to be accelerating toward that. And even when you play those 16 freshmen, you start those 16 freshmen, you talk to the next class, they're looking all over the country, and they're like, I'd be behind a senior here, but I'd be behind a sophomore at Illinois. Well, do I want to wait 3 years for my shot, or do I want to go here where the coaches are telling me I've got a shot? So it's all that balance.
You follow turnovers.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Tell us about it.
So I follow in 2012.
By the way, I saw something the other day where 78% of games are won by the team that has the most turnovers.
Yes.
In a game.
Yes. Yes.
So go ahead.
So in 2012 on the blog, I just sourced 10 years of interceptions in NCAA football. All, I think it was 124 Division I, you know, FBS teams then. Illinois was second to last that year. So from 2003 to 2012, you add up all the interceptions, and Illinois was second to last. And that has carried forward each year. Illinois has never been out of the – keep a running total of each 10 years. This year I just did the numbers for 2008 through last year, and in that same – Illinois was second to last again. So interception-wise, Akron is pulling down dozens more interceptions. Troy, Texas State, you know, even tiny schools are getting 14 interceptions a year while Illinois gets three. And those, that difference between those 11 interceptions, just sprinkle them in anywhere during a game, it can change the momentum of it. It's 50 yards. You know, maybe you score on that interception. It's just, it's the one Achilles heel. Well, one of the heels.
That's the result of probably not being getting quite enough rush on the passer.
Correct.
And not being particularly good at coverage. I mean,
yes.
That's about what else can I say?
As well as not forcing passes. Like if the other team has to run, can just run. They know they're going to get 6 yards every rush. They're not going to have to throw the ball. Like we what was that Ohio State game? Braxton Miller's freshman year, he had one completion in Champaign, and Ohio State beat Illinois. So if they don't have to run, doesn't matter. You know, you're not going to get interceptions because they're not going to put the ball in the air.
Good point.
So they, yeah, it's a combination of all that.
Another couple of minutes talking Illinois football with Robert Rosenthal, IlliniBoard.com. Of course, what we've seen yesterday and so far today will change early next week.
Yes.
Sometime, maybe Tuesday, I don't know exactly when, but when they put the pads on.
Yes, yes. It's always a big day because some of the more physical players will start to shine at that time. You know, what you see in line drills now is not what you're going to see when they're in full pads because – and that's when the guys with the strength and the physicality begin to shine through. So, yeah, it will. It's fun to watch all this offense because usually when they're in shorts, there's a lot of offense because the defense can't really be that physical. So we shall see when that all changes.
Your biggest concern at this point is what?
Probably the youth of the defense. You know, there's one senior on the entire defense, not just in the starting lineup, on the entire roster of the defense, there's one senior. It's Delshawn Phillips, who's a guy that Lovey brought in last year as a junior college player. So basically, I mean, if you think about that, Lovey has – kids have left or some maybe have felt they were forced out or whatever, but there's not a single Tim Beckman player left on the defense. They have all left. And so you have one senior and a few juniors and then mostly sophomores and freshmen.
You know, I was going to mention some of the players that left. Everybody talks about Trey Watson, that he'll be a starter at Maryland, and we're really going to miss him. I was stunned to see their actual ranking of him. He had a lot of tackles, but boy, was he ranked low. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. I think – at linebacker, what Hardy Nickerson wants is a guy who's going to be in the correct gap on every play. Like, I think that's why you see Jake Hansen running with the ones all the time here. He's back from the knee injury. He was probably going to start last year before the knee injury.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy who, when they're in the defensive meeting room and they talk, okay, if you see this and the fullback does this and the tailback is here, you are off this guy's left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows how I read it. I see that. I'm off this guy's left shoulder. You know, you can have a good linebacker who can burst into the backfield and make a tackle.
Everybody sees that.
Yes, but if you're not in the right gap and what was going to be a 2-yard run turns into a 33-yard run because you made the wrong read, then that's what the coaches are watching film and pulling their hair out.
Well, of the players that we lost, 16 mm-hmm. of them that left, who is the most important? Who do you miss the most?
I think it's Tito Ogbenigbo.
Okay. He went to Miami. Huh?
Yeah, he went to Miami. I think he was surprisingly good last year. You know, there was that thing in the final game where he threw the yeah. flag at the official. I think that was maybe his last moment at Illinois.
That's right.
But he was heavily in the rotation, sometimes starting with Milan at defensive tackle, was pretty good. And you can see by where all these guys transferred, he went to the best spot mm-hmm. and will probably play a lot for Miami this year. So that's an, you know, if you had that senior defensive tackle in the center of the thing, maybe that stabilizes that defensive line a little bit. As of now, it's just still so young.
Robert, we appreciate your time. We'll let you get back over there. They're doing some 11-on-11.
Well, I got to go watch that. I got so much to see.
Yeah, well, thanks for your time. And enjoy talking football with you.
Merry Christmas.
All right, thank you.
Robert Rosenthal, IlliniBoard.com is where you can keep up with him. We'll take a break at 10:44. More Saturday Sports Talk, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk, coming your way from Illinois football practice after this timeout. Stay with us.
Dave Gentry joining on the DWS Morning Show for United Way's Sue Gray. That's Monday morning on DWS.
Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate at Illinois football practice, former Illini great Scott Studwell in town with the Vikings. Good to see you.
Well, it's good to be seen. How you been?
Doing well. What brings you to town, and what are you looking at here specifically?
Well, we're out on our this is our first scouting trip of the season. We're just going around to about, I think we've got 10 schools in the next 12 days that we're going to visit, and you know, everybody's undefeated right now, so they're a little more likely to talk to you, and they're a lot of friendly faces this time of year. So, but this gives us a chance to get a feel for where we need to come back in the fall, and you know, we've got certain prospects at every school that we're looking at, and just go from there.
Scott, we got a lot of sophomores on this team. Are you looking at those, or are you more interested in the Allegrettis of the team, the veterans on the team?
No, unless they give us actual juniors to look at, we just come in and look at the senior class. You know, it's hard enough to figure those guys out rather than looking at the sophomores. And you know, if kids are great players as young players, you know, freshmen, sophomore, even juniors, you know, typically we know about them. But we're in here scouting the senior class.
What can you tell when they're out there without pads and you know, you're not seeing any real competition? Do you get more information from film or the coaches?
Well, you know, this is just an initial look. We body type them. We see how they move around. How athletic are they? You know, this is hard when there's no pads, and you know, especially if you're evaluating offensive linemen or defensive linemen. So, you know, the skill guys are a little easier to evaluate this time of year. But this, like I said, this is kind of just an initial look. See if they're in shape. See if they're ready to go. You know, and get the information that we need from the coaches, and it makes it for a little shorter days in the fall.
Talking to Scott Studwell, you basically spend just one day at each camp, and you just kind of line them up geographically and go from one to another, huh?
Yeah, we were actually at Western Illinois this morning, so stopped over here this afternoon. We're over at Illinois State tomorrow. So, yeah, it's one a day, one look a day, and we move on. So,
what are some of your memories when you come back to Champaign-Urbana about your time here?
Well, there's a lot more good than bad, obviously. Wish we would have had better football teams back when I was here, but you know, I still have some great friends here in town, and actually I'll see a couple of them tonight, and you know, I love coming back here. There's a lot of fond memories.
You know what I remember is a big old tackle that turned a linebacker.
Yeah.
I always wondered if they kept that time on you when you were a tackle as opposed to when you moved to linebacker.
Well, thank God they moved me back to linebacker. You know, I mean, I came in as a linebacker, and then they tried to make me a tight end, and that didn't work out. So, it was probably a blessing in disguise that I tore my knee up that spring game and sat out for a year and moved back to linebacker, and the rest was kind of history.
How many years did you play for Minnesota?
14.
14 years.
14.
Wow. You avoid all the concussions?
No, but you know, I mean, knock on wood, it's. I feel good. You know, it's after, you know, 14 years, and I mean, I've been with the organization for 42.
Is that right? 42 years. Is that right?
So it's been a pretty good run.
Speaking of concussions, is that the biggest change in today's game as to when you played?
Well, you know, obviously it's something that was necessary. It was a necessary change. You know, there's a lot of guys that I know that I played with that are really struggling. You know, a lot of guys that have died of ALS and that are suffering today. So, you know, it's a necessary change. I hope it doesn't ruin the game eventually. But, you know, I mean, I think there's only so much you can do. And it's a violent game that's played with big, fast, strong athletes. And it's, you know, some people are more susceptible than others, and people are going to get hurt. And, you know, it's sad to see, but, you know, that's a risk you take when you play this game.
I see where they're actually trying to clarify the rule even as of this week. And you can't go in with your head, I guess. And how do you go in and make a tackle without using your head?
Well, and that, you know, I mean, that kind of goes against all the everything that you've been taught as a young player in Little League football all the way up to this level and beyond. So, you know, I think you can only regulate this game to a certain extent. And there's going to be, you know, you can't protect these guys from themselves and from others, you know, and it's just part of the game, and it's the nature of the game, and it's the way you're taught to play. So, you know, I just don't know how they could ever really get that to the point where it would change the game dramatically for anybody.
One more question. Lovey Smith, in year number 3, what do you think of the project that he has here in Illinois?
Well, you know, he's got his hands full. You know, they're a young team. They've got to learn how to win close games. They've got to stay competitive in you know, the games that they're outmatched, probably physically, and they got to get lucky, and they got to stay healthy. And, you know, I mean, hopefully they can build some early momentum early in the season. I think their schedule is fairly favorable. And, you know, they're going to be in the game with probably most of the people they play, and if they can learn how to win the close ones, then hopefully they'll have a good year.
Scott Studwell, always good to see you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks,
Lord.
Scott Studwell played at the U of I in 1973, 75, and 76. Played 14 years, as he said, with the Minnesota Vikings, 1977 to 1990. Made 2 Pro Bowls, Lauren, 1987 and 88. He's in the Minnesota Vikings Ring of Honor around their stadium there, and he was an All-Big Ten player for Illinois back in 1976.
He was a great player, and, you know, he's one of the lightest linebackers in the NFL when he played.
When you look at him today, you wouldn't say, hey, that guy was a football player, because he's not very big.
Well, no, not very tall, but he's pretty thick.
Yeah, he was a good one, no doubt. It is 10:54, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk, and speaking of Pella and windows and doors, if you've been checking those out or thinking about checking them out, you probably already know that the most important doors at your home are your entry door and your patio door. And if you take a trip to the Pella Window Store at 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign, you can help clear up what sometimes could be an overwhelming situation. Mike Mary has a great staff out there. They're standing by ready to answer all of those questions. They're open for just over another hour till noon today. There are many choices in windows and doors, and they have 8 patio doors alone on display in their showroom. They can show you all kinds of other doors and windows as well. They'll not only help you decide what's best for you and your property, they'll stand behind them with a limited warranty. The Pella folks offer a one-stop shopping center. You can find the products, the installation, and the financing if that is something that might interest you. Window and door shopping is not something you do every day, so you want to make sure you get it right. Do your research, set a budget, work with the pros at the Pella Window Store, then you're in a position to show off your new windows and doors to family and friends. The Pella Window Store, 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. As I mentioned, on Saturday, they're open until 12. They open at 9 and go 9 to noon. They also have stores in Danville, Decatur, and Bloomington. Check them out online at PellaOfChampaign.com. IlliniPellas.com. 10:55, a final break, and then we'll have some final words on the Illini Pellas Saturday Sports Talk from Illinois football practice after this.
This is Brian Barnhart. I'll be off on Monday on Penny for Your Thoughts. Mary Shank will be the guest host from News Gazette Media. Among her guests will be Judge Tom DeFantis. Monday, Mary Shank filling in for me on Penny on DWS.
A couple of minutes before 11 o'clock on Illini Pellas Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. Ed Bond is here with us as well. Final couple of minutes of the show, the final few minutes of Illinois football practice. Here on day number two, they went yesterday afternoon from 3 to 5, and then actually went from about 3 to 5:30, and then going again today. They'll be off tomorrow and back at it on Monday. So we're underway, Lauren, ready or not.
Yeah, and I think that so much emphasis on the quarterback situation, I think we're already seeing that the freshmen are going to have a long way to go in terms of getting any playing time, and I think that the reason they brought in Bush is to give him a real shot at it, and so I think it's down to Cam Thomas and Bush, and I'm sure that Thomas would he'd be the starter today, but I'm not sure what it'll be in a couple of weeks or by the time we're playing up in South Florida in Chicago. I would think Bush would be more likely to be the starter.
A.J. Bush, as we've mentioned,
Steve. There are a lot of fifth-year guys all over the country, quarterbacks, that are popping up here or there. I mean, it isn't just Michigan. It isn't just Illinois. There are a lot of them that are making a difference because they see that they can't beat out one guy, but maybe those two people are pretty equal. And you see them moving around, and it changes everything.
Another fifth-year guy that was expected to be here to play was a wide receiver, Shadon Metters. But he is out for the season with an injury. He transferred from Appalachian State.
Yeah, and he had some really serious foot ankle problems, and he just isn't going to be able to play.
That's going to take care of this edition of Illini Pellas Saturday Sports Talk. We kicked it off talking with Josh Whitman. We also visited with ticket manager Jason Hegemeyer, radio analyst, former Illini Martin O'Donnell, director of player personnel James Kirkland, Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News, Robert Rosenthal from IlliniBoard.com, Scott Studwell, former Illini. We visited with him as well. He's now a scout for the Vikings. And we heard from Rod Smith and A.J. Bush. Appreciate your time. This is WDWS Champaign-Urbana. For Lauren Tate and Ed Bond, I'm Steve Kelly. Appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.